About the last farm up on Tucker Hill, it's all grown up now. It's just a path up there. And that's where I said they had a stone piece and stuff on it.
Yeah. And
the boys, you got a Maxwell car. It must have been, I think it must have been while we were in Toledo. We come back 32, and he was going to learn to drive it. The boys started learning him. So he got in one day and going to drive it. And headed in, there was the house, and then the woodshed, and the horse barn, and the carriage shed right in front of it. He had a pair of big black horses. And he always had a big team, and he had, you know, he's all horsemen. So he started up this car, was going to drive it into the carriage part of the shed. He drove it in there, and instead of hitting the brakes, he hit the gas. Right on, hit the partition and the heels on the horses. Well, the horse kicked all front end of that car in, and the rim of one of the headlights went up around his leg. And Sterling said, they had one hell of a job getting that thing off that horse's leg. It was jammed up there tight, and everywhere I get to hear them, they'd pretty near kick their heads off. So they just towed the car out and pulled it up to the part of the junk, just farm machinery and stuff, and left it. And so he never drove a car again during the war. Just for Sterling overseas, he got in touch with his father. They told him, have somebody get his car out and get ready. They allowed him 5 gallons of gas in their home. He wanted to have it a few days his home. My brother Clifton was here, and I think he had a Ford sedan. So he went down to help start it. They couldn't get it started first, and my brother said, "Uncle Rob, get in there and steer," and he said, "I'll push you." It was wintertime, they had high snow banks, and it rained and froze. It's kind of slippery. So he pushed more toward what they call the Laro Farm now. And the old road went over by there and then through a covered bridge right by the Laro Farm, 90 green deer, and then up through by our Haps garage. So I had trouble getting one brother got pushing him. And got him started. Well, instead of putting the brake on, he stepped on the gas. He went roaring up the road, and that is a big I think a straight 8 or V8 Oldsmobile. And he really took off. He had up the road there. Brother started catching that Ford. Uncle Rob went up there just before he got to Laro place. He went up on the snowbank and pretty near tipped over. It whipped right around, went up to the other bank, and come right back toward my brother. I guess my brother he didn't know what was going to happen, but he missed him. Finally got the car stopped. I guess he did get foot off the gas. And then my brother said that they got it back. My brother took him down to the store, I guess it was. Uncle Rob, he liked to talk where he goes, you know, one of these old tires. Your boy, he says, and I'm so glad a driver. And he started telling all about it. My brother was bunting, trying to shut him up because one of the motor vehicle officers standing right there by him. You know, I didn't have a license or a thing, you know.
Oh, dear.
Well, in the school, when I first started school in Wastefield, as soon as it got warm, all the boys had to go barefoot to school. And the only one that didn't was the Clay Richardson's boys up where the village inn is now, that big house next to the store. And his brother lived up where the den was, Roy, and they're the ones that owned the mill. Well, they had a boy named
Selden?
No, he was
adopted. Oh, that's a different one? Okay.
Well, I think in a few minutes. But he was the only one that ended up wearing shoes. And of course, it's all just first eight graders there. When he got on the barge that day with the shoes, well, they shoved him one place and the other and kidded him about it, you know. And the time when I come back from Toledo 6 years later, everybody wore shoes. I think they made it state law or something. They had to wear shoes at school.
Okay.
But they were all wearing shoes then. But at that time, they most everybody went barefoot.
Yeah, I've always heard one of our neighbors was talking about how they always used to walk barefoot to church on Sunday, but would carry their shoes and then put them on and then go walk barefoot home.
Well, I remember Father saying that the Smales, when they still had a family, and the Livingston here one day got together, and they rented a Concord stage from, and the fellow owned it, I think his name was McCarthy or something. He, some of the others probably tell you, but he lived down, as you turn to go over to, what was it, the Meadows there, where the old, you know, low-income housing stuff is. It's that house that's just bold as you turn. I don't think Friday ever was
24 years before I ran my mother.
It's probably about 1900s.
Yeah, because there was, I guess there was no road through where the road is now. It was all up high, wasn't it?
What?
The road.
Granville Wood.
Yeah.
It follows pretty much the same, but they widened it, and it's quite a lot the same. But it's, I went through there a number of times, long in the late 30s, cause, and it's quite a lot the same, except they widened it and straightened in a few places. But basically, it just followed the brook down through. And, how you come out of Mipsykes toward Moortown, where that dam is, before they put that dam in, the road used to be way down below, just right next to the river.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, a little of the road's still up where they pull out the park. Down over there, you still might be able to make out a little of it. Father said he'd remember when it was there. Mm-hmm. Of course, they had a covered bridge there, too, just below the dam. He called it Casey Bridge. He made a couple of right angles and started up to the backside of the river and then angle and come right over.
Huh.
That's before they put the bridge in there now. Let's see. Was, oh, yeah, the school barge, you know, was a similar to the wagons you take to go out west with. They had the seat in the front where you face the horses, and then there's kind of partition there, and the seats went along on the inside of the back, about like be a covered wagon.
Mm-hmm.
On each side, for the, and a couple steps in the rear for the pupils to get in, or students to get in. And the top was built up about like you'd have for a Siri. Instead of a fringe, they had the canvas curtains. It'd be rolled up, and then the weather was bad, they dropped it down. Well, we got on that, and there's a couple steps to get in. Well, that was the way it was when I went to Toledo. And when I got back in 32, they'd got motorized. They had, I think it was a Willis and Bessie Armstrong had the school barge below Waitsfield, and it was
called the school barge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we called it.
And so they'd fixed up my big pickup, about like a 3/4-ton pickup now, and it's built on the same principle, and a couple steps in the rear, and it, except it's closed in. The other wasn't that, you drop the curtains, you know, and then I think it was Earl Baird had the one up on Waitsfield Common around there, and then a fellow named Ed Bennett. He lives just in where they beside the Kenyon's, by a house that drives in there by our Douglas, that house there. And he drove the other one. His was a two ton. I remember it's a Ford truck, just the rigger platform body with high sideboards. And he had a couple steps in the rear to get up in there. And you had bench seats on each side. And I had the probably a galvanized pipe, something for bowls, and then the canvas tied down, all that. It was all open otherwise. So big chill ride. And the one on the rear sat toward the tail end. You better hang on. And that was what they call a school barge.
I'll be darned. Now, I've never heard anybody talk.
I'd like to had the picture of the
school
barge.
I was going to say, I wonder if there are any photographs around them.
They should be somewhere. Seemed like that's somebody should have one.
Do you remember them?
Oh, yeah, I've ridden in them.
The horse-drawn one?
No, not the horse-drawn.
The trot.
Yeah, well, she was born about the time the horse-drawn was worn out. Of
just a young thing, yeah.
She's just young, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he used to rent that out. Oh, yeah, my friend went to school here. I think the teacher's name was Russ, and she taught all 8 grades. There's 18 pupils right down here, and just in this neighborhood, they all had big families, you know. And the boys used to, they had a big Travis sled, and they could seat 10 or 12 on it. And you start out and go down the hill, and then the bridge that just come up number 9, used to angle toward it. So it went down through there, and you could go the other way. But now it was pretty well straightened it. And they used to go down and get back time to go to school again. So one day, they talked to the teacher into going with them. She wasn't only a few years older than the pupils, you know. So this up to where Willie Braggle is now, went down through. And they got, went clear down through, they got past where Tucker Hill Turn is below the Millbrook Lodge. And by the time they got back, it was about 2 o'clock, and the teacher's mad her in a harness. And the father said there's a fellow named Steve Stewart went to school there. He was supposed to fix the fire, at noon. And during noon hour, so just before it started up, he fixed it. There's much green wood and wet wood and stuff. It didn't have much fire, but it had a lot of smoke. And they had opened all the doors and the windows. And it was cold days. The teacher had dismissed the school for the afternoon.
They must have loved that.
And, they got the water. Over here where the road was down there, it used to be a big farm down there. And here, had the schoolhouse in there before they put the other. They had one over by Vassis, and then they put this one last year or so, and then they got the other one, number 1. And you can see the outline where the well was. They dug a well there, and I heard it's 20 or 30 feet deep. And in springtime, you can still see just about that big ground in the middle, but you can still see where the stone was.
Oh, yeah.
And so I guess the water wasn't that good or something, so you just get up to Smith Place to bring down the pail, and everybody used the same dipper, of course.
Yeah. Schools have changed some, haven't they? Yeah.
Well, Friday I drove a milk truck back in. I just forward to see, was it before? Yeah, just before I went to Toledo, I drove it a couple of years. I took it over to the Hoyton Company. It was over in Waterbury. It's over toward where Grenier's are now, I think.
Where
the Grenier Gas Company and that mm-hmm. is now. It's over mm-hmm. in that way. I think the building's gone. And I used to go over there about noon. The afternoon, they'd load up fertilizer stuff, grain that, bring it back. And everything was done by hand, you know, the cans and stuff, they all handled milk cans. Of course, they'd stack them higher than that, so. And they used to use lunch over at the creamery here. And he got, or the milk car was ice cold and shipped it on railroad cars. So he got hard to drink a quart of milk. And after a little while, he'd finished up with a pint of cream. He did that every day. Must have been bad for him because he had to quit work when he was 85 and he died when he was 88.
Right. It's like.
Well, me, Hap Smith's been his father in law if he'll live. Eloise is his wife's father. What's his name now? Clifford Heath, and he lived up in East Warren.
Clifford Heath?
Yeah. He lived up in East Warren where, what's his name? Well.
Was there a Pinky Heath? Is that the same family?
I don't know.
Well, anyway, he lived up there. Or Lester Senor lives now, or did live. And I was working for him when he thought he's having sometimes stomach troubles. And they took him out to the hospital, and he had burst appendix, peritonitis. In those days, it took a while to get any help, so in order to get medicine and stuff, and they sent down to Boston. One day, they fly in up a couple of hours. Then it took about 2 days to bring up a train, and peritonitis went through his system, and he died. He's only about 36. And what was it I was going to mention about?
Working for him.
Yeah, but I can't. Oh, yeah, he told me about, speaking of sugar, and about this old fellow with sugar, and then they always left their syrup and stuff right in the sugar house, and didn't think of it. So he went up one day, and some of his syrup was missing. So he never said anything, never even told his wife. And it went on about 7 years. I think I told you this the other time. And down the general store one day, and the fellow piped up and says, "Hey," he says, "you ever find out who stole your syrup?" He says, "No, I never did," but he says, "I know now." And Paul's name was Thompson. And that was his name, Sugar Thompson. And then the day he died, he was the one that stole the syrup 7 years before. I think I mentioned it last time.
I think you did too. Because
some of these stuff I'm probably just repeating.
No, that's good though, because and I think I probably told you in return, I had heard another story of I can't remember who it was right now, at the Warren store, who somebody had stolen a wheel of cheese.
Oh, yeah.
And he pulled the same stunt and didn't mention it to anybody.
Yeah.
And the guy said, "Did you ever find out who stole your cheese?"
Yeah. And there's a fellow around here, he's supposed to be more or less they used to have your town halfwit or something like
that.
He went out Montpelier at the depot there. And the fellow had a cigar counter and that. He looked him over and said to the fellow, he said, "Do you take the fellow's last cent for a 10-cent cigar?" One of those, and that was the highest priced cigars in those days. The fellow said, "I sure would." And he said, "Well, I'll take that 10-center right there." And I looked out and laid the cigar down. He still out and laid the penny down. He says, "That's the last cent." And he walked out. And there's another fellow named, they called Wooly up here. He lived up Warren. They lived just above where the Lyle Ford farm is. It's just past that square-shaped house on your left going toward Warren. And there's a house there where they pull out there now. There used to be a house long in there somewhere before they changed the road over. And his name, Wooly Walden, I guess the name was. He's up in Long's store up there one day, and we went out, some fellow up, tripped him up, went down and says, "Why, Willie," he says, "what you been drinking?" Tangled foot, walked out. So sometimes they weren't so...
So half-witted.
Half-witted, they made out.
Quick return. Gosh. Well, I've always been... intrigued with the humor that came out of the general store. I mean, that's where a lot of the humor sort of bubbled up, and humorous incidences and stories. Well, like the guy calling, being called Sugar Thompson afterwards.
Now, I don't know if I got any more or not. I remember something I had laughed about. Carl Long here, in the long story, he loved working the woods, you know, and he had my father and Uncle Albert, and I worked here on the high school holidays and stuff. And Carl, he got a new truck, and he'd do anything to get those up in there, you know. If he got hung up, I think he just loved it, but he stuff like that. He'd always get somewhere where you'd think no one else would go, he's going to try it. They finally got him up, it was in the winter time, and we had to roll these logs up clear from the ground up. This is a straight job, and on this, you know, flatbed truck. Got it down there, and I got this big beach on, and this bowl. So Uncle Albert says, "Well," said, "we had to turn on this belly. Well, Carl says, that would be on his back. Noah says, best way to lay is on the belly. Well, Carl says, no, it's on the back. They started arguing back and forth. They're both getting a little hot under the collar. So, after a while, he grabbed the can up and gave it a yank. He says, there. He says, that's just where it goes. Well, Carl says, that's just where I wanted it, on his back. They're both arguing about where it was, and they both wanted it, had the same thing in
just different
mind,
words.
You know. And Carl had the truck, and he used to go to Montpelier, I think, twice a week, in Burlington, twice a week, and freighting in the valley here. And then,
because he owned the store, didn't he?
Yeah. And then Nelson Patch ran it for years, along with his thing. And now some fellow has it down the valley there, and I don't know
what his name.
Who was it that had it before that? You remember the one we sent that trunk with?
So Nelson Patch had what the freight.
The freight, and he hauled the last one to haul the milk out of the valley with the milk.
That's right, because Ed Irish suggested I talk with him.
Yeah, and Nelson was a rugged man. The only other one I ever knew could pick a can of milk in each hand and swing it up into the truck was Nelson Patch and my father.
Ooh. That's
something. They weren't big men. They were, you know, 100.
They're kind of hot.
They never went more than 170, 80 pounds, I don't think. They'd carry one each hand up through.
I'll have to ask him about that.
Yeah.
How old is he now?
He must be well up in his 70s.
Do you think he'd mind talking with me?
No, I don't think so. You know where he lives?
Mm-mm. It's somewhere in Warren.
Yeah, it's just up by the cemetery there somewhere.
The cemetery.
Just up below there, and I think
across
you go
the road or something.
Yeah, I think you go up that road to go up there by the cemetery, and it's at the alphabet. There, I think on these mobile put the other houses, mm-hmm. You know. Yeah.
A bird on the door.
Look at that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the changes here have been incredible, and
see, after the war, we moved in here. Outside that fast was the only one on top of the hill, and Willie hadn't even built us that house. And they come up after we were after the war. But of course, that's his Willie's great uncle, I guess, owned that place. And his Willie's grandfather had this other place down where the queue is. Where this white house is. And of course his father lived down little red house just below where he turned into
bread basket.
Oh right.
No.
Yeah.
Before that they lived there, but before that when my folks and that they lived down across from where Andrew Baird lives, and there's that white house below the shopping center, and across the road is that red house. And that's where Willie's folks lived. And then later on they moved up where there, but when I was younger, but that's why they lived when I first knew them.
Yeah,
my folks, and they were pretty good friends. His folks were pretty good friends.
Because his father, I guess, worked at the store.
Yeah, he worked there for Carl Long for years. Willie worked for him.
Yeah, that's what he said too.
Yeah.
In fact, he has a photograph of when the store burned.
Next
morning.
I was in the service when that happened. During the war. Yeah.
So you were born over by Tucker Hill, the Tucker Hill.
I was born right next to the number school 9 school. This foundation's still there. And she was born over north. I went halfway around the world and back, and back cross country 2-3 times, and end up marrying a girl right in my hometown.
And then you moved to Montpelier, though, early on, didn't you?
Just for 2-3 years. I went out there, and Father worked the stone shed. And I was out there, and when they had the old-time circus, I never went to circus until just before I went to California. I went 38 with an uncle of mine. But they had it with all the parade. They come right up State Street and out Main.
Oh, I've seen photographs.
Down around.
Of that.
And the circus was where the high school is now. That's where they held it.
Uh huh.
And sometime long in there, and I can't tell you exactly where. It was either there or up where the shopping center is across from Harry's.
Mm-hmm.
They had a carnival. And remember, Father, they had a Briscoe car. And some fellow come along and talked Father and have his initials put between the front and rear door on the driver's side and a gold pinstripe put along. And it was all for a couple dollars, but you couldn't touch it for a couple hours. And I remember we were going somewhere, and I saw my first airplane. It was painted white. I never see it take off, but it's coming in for landing. I'd hear it, and somebody would be pushing the crowd back so I could land, and I'd see it off the other side. I wasn't up close, and I couldn't understand it because I see people getting off its back because they're getting out of the cockpit.
Oh,
and I thought it was a bird of some kind.
That's what another guy I was interviewing pulled his mother out of the house and said, "Look, Mom, here comes two crows carrying a broomstick." That's what he thought.
I remember seeing a couple of people getting out, you know, and
I was probably about amazing.
Probably 5 or 6 years old. That's the first time I ever saw the Nixons. I saw was when I went to Toledo that summer. My uncle had a job building a house right close to probably a quarter mile down the road from where this open field was, just out of Woodsville, between Woodsville and little town of Woodsville and Toledo on what's called the Woodsville Road. And there was about 3 planes there. And during on a weekend, they would be flying, you know, past you. But during the week, I went down there one day and they were working. No one ever spoke to me. And I just, first airplanes I remember seeing. And while I was out there, 1/4 of July, or the night before, this plane flew over and had some fireworks or something. And I told my folks, I said, "That plane's on fire." And of course, as a kid, they didn't believe me. Next day, I read in the paper how the plane had been on fire. And that must have been about 29:30. They'd put a new airport in by then, about 6 miles out of Toledo. And it had caught fire. And the fellows managed to land it and get away from it.
Before it
but
exploded.
It burned the plane off. I was out just a little afterwards, and it was out still out in the middle of the field there.
Mm.
And the Akron dirigible, a few months after it was built, one of the biggest ones, the Macon built later, heard these Indians one night or something, noise, and everybody in the neighborhood got out. It was quite quiet. In fact, we didn't have as much traffic going by where we lived, and it's just off the main road as they have here. Everybody was out looking up, and this dirigible went over, and you could walk as fast as it was going. It seemed to be a block long. I never seen anything that looks so big in my life. Of course, I was probably...
And how high up was it?
Not too high. Probably 500-600 feet.
Gosh.
And it went on and on. And then you could see the gondola underneath all lit up. And it was at night. And you could see the propellers doing engines. It was big enough so they could pick up a couple small biplane. They'd take 2 or 3 in a place where they made for a hangar on it. But it went over, and a year or so later, that crashed, and then the other one did. But it went over, and it was just slow, and here the Indians running. Everybody in the neighborhood was out looking, and it went right directly overhead. All you had to do was stand and look right up at it.
Just amazing.
And I lived, I guess that's the first place I told you where I first had the first coat.
Yeah.
And up the street there, they called it the Cherry Street. Went out to Star Avenue in the end, and we live on Walden Street, just a block from my uncle. We had a house there. And, one night, they had an old colored fellow. I was right in the worst depression. Anybody do anything for a job? This old colored fellow, he must have been up about the 60s. He was cleaning up in the funeral home. And that, he went by this coffin, and the fellow sat up. And the old fellow went out and had a glass door like that. He went out through the door, but he didn't open it. And uh, What 'twas? The fellow had a strap on him, and Regan Martin set in, and the strap broke, and he'd come up. Well, that old fellow wouldn't go back inside there, and he quit his job. He wouldn't have nothing more to do with it. They said he was scared white.
Oh, God. Can you imagine?
Yeah, it didn't get hurt, but he went right through. It was a glass door, and he went right through it.
Well, I think Rupert Blair or was it Bob Gove was telling the story of the guy that died, and before they could get any help, rigor mortis had set in, and there was a real problem with the coffin, and, you know, because... And I think when they had an open coffin and the guy tried to push his legs down and his head came up and hit him and practically knocked him out in the head. I can't remember the
way
that.
I remember we up there. That's where I went to California. Rupert Blair used to run around a motorcycle. He's down toward Burlington. And he got dumped some way, I forget. I don't know if it was an accident or something. But anyhow, he landed on the seat of his britches and it skidded down the road. Well, he got up and he was up there right afterwards, the same day, I guess. And he was got talking to him. I think it was an accident there or something. He got dumped while he was there. He got talking to some fellow, and some fellow said, he said, you better cover up your rear. He skipped out and right down to Bear Hide. He'd take it right out of the seat of his britches.
Oh, dear. He is funny. I went to see your... I guess it was your uncle Ernest Nelson the other day.
Oh, how'd you do?
He did. He, you know, he remembers a lot.
Yeah. I haven't seen him for quite a few years.
Yeah. And he, in fact, he told me to go see. I forgot the name of the guy. Was it Don somebody up in Faiston, North Faiston?
Gerald Dunbar.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He might be, because he's around here all his life.